But ultimately, it's about shifting from like a freelancer who just does the work to a strategic independent who looks for that context, who looks for that kind of strategic layer to add to their work, which basically makes their own work better paid and more resilient.
Hey, friend, it's David Dubinsky here in New York City. So excited for you to learn from Tom Crichlow. I learned about Tom from prior guest Howard Gray, and Tom has been working on a book called The Strategic Independent, which breaks down ways that freelancers can level up their work by getting better clients and getting paid more for their work. And one of the key ideas behind that is asking for context to the work that you do. Tom is a strategic independent himself. He's been self-employed for 6 years, which we talk about here. We also talk about identity and crafting and creating a narrative around your work and how that can constantly evolve. And this is something that I've been pondering and have been pondering and was a key part of why I started this podcast, because I was getting so many questions from people. Tom is just really brilliant and provided a blueprint and framework for you here around the strategic independent. As always, this episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. Here we go with Tom. So Tom, I'd love to just start off with, if we were going to an event tonight, how do you typically introduce yourself?
It's a great question. Usually I start with some combination of independent strategy consultant or blogger or like British expat. Those are usually the three kind of touch points that I make in an intro.
Awesome, cool. Well, one place I just would love to just start off with is just about the book that you're working on, and a lot of the work that I think you've written about is the strategic independent. Maybe just like quickly start things off talking about what that topic is and how it maybe is different than a freelancer.
Yeah, sure. So I've been an independent consultant for almost 6 years now. And in the process of my own kind of journey as an independent, through like freelancing, consulting, and so on, I got pretty fed up with a lot of the writing and knowledge that was out there. There's a lot of like, you too can earn $1 million if you follow my, 5-point plan kind of writing. And there was a lot less of the writing about, this idea that every time I send an invoice, I want to throw up. This kind of like internal and external idea of like identity, like who are you? What are the labels that you call yourself? What is the emotional roller coaster of consulting, of being a freelancer? And through that journey, I realized that my writing was resonating with folks. It started out just blog posts, and then through a series of kind of like feedback loops and so on, I thought, hey, why not I turn this into a book project? And what's been nice about that is it has become a very kind of self-referential project, right? It has now become an object through which all of my consulting gets kind of like viewed through my own eyes, right? So every single time I work on a client project, I can now situate that client project inside, like, well, what did I learn? What can I write about for the book? So it kind of has created this kind of narrative megastructure for my own life that now becomes like, oh, great, I'm making progress now. Like every new client is like a new step along this journey of learning how to be a consultant, learning what it means to do consulting work, learning what it means to be independent. And so it's kind of been this nice project through which I can kind of create almost like a career trajectory or some kind of arc, like narrative arc, through my own work, which I think is something that is often missing for folks who are independent freelancers, consultants, etc.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Me as a podcaster, and some other projects too, I kind of look at prior episodes as a, to chart the path a little bit of like, what was I doing 6 weeks ago? What was I doing 6 months ago? Mm-hmm. But for you, and just in this context, it's now projects kind of fit into this overall kind of narrative and stuff. And it wasn't necessarily where you kind of started.
No. And it's kind of all emerged kind of accidentally. I think the first couple of years being out on my own, doing my own thing were, there's a lot of like basics. It's like, oh shit, how do I earn money? How do I get clients? How do I do the work? How do I set up an LLC? Like all of these things are kind of like, you're in the weeds. But then after a couple of years of that, I felt like I was starting to lift my head up a little bit more to be like, okay, I've got some of these things down a little bit. Things are a little bit more stable. I feel like I'm doing okay at some of these things. You know, I got them figured out, the 101 stuff. And then, you know, naturally my mind turns to like, well, am I going to spend 5 years doing this, 25 years doing this? Do I want to spend 5 years doing this? Do I want to spend 25 years doing this? And you know, I think that notion of that broader narrative arc, again, is often missing for freelancers and independents you know, those kind of folks who are charting their own course, because A, you're charting your own course usually for a reason, which is like you want to be idiosyncratic about it. You want to do your own thing. So you don't want to be beholden to other people's narrative arcs. But at the same time, you don't have anyone to talk to about it, right? Like everyone else has got their own journey, but everyone's at different stages. There isn't a universal mechanism. Like when you're in a job, you have a literal job title and like discipline and speciality. There are like people on LinkedIn that you can talk to. There are groups you can join. And all of that is like just much less true for people who are charting their own path. And so I think a lot about how you have to do the narrative generation yourself. Like it's one of the things that when you have a job, narrative formation is done mostly by other people, mostly by your employer. And when you work for yourself, you have to take on that burden of like generating your own narrative, generating notions of progression, generating notions of advancing, course corrections, all of that stuff.
That's fascinating. But also blogging is a key piece of, as you mentioned, is also a key piece of, call it, identity and story and narrative as well, in addition to actual consulting, implementation, and stuff like that too.
Yep. Yeah. And you know, I've been blogging for a long time in all kinds of different guises. And I think in the last couple of years, it's become a much more kind of important and crucial part of both my identity, but also like my practice. You know, it's blogging and writing is how I get clients. Like I need people writing my blog and reading my blog and seeing the stuff that I write. But it's also become a way that I process and like generate that narrative for myself around like who I am and what I'm doing. I read a really great book recently called Working Identity, which is all about like career shifts and how the kind of traditional wisdom of career shifts is kind of upside down. You know, in the book, she talks about how, you know, most people think about it as like you do a bunch of deep introspection about who you want to be in life, and then you go make it happen. And in this book, Working Identity, she talks about how it's much more an iterative process of like you try some things, you see if you like it, you see what that generates, you see what connections that leads to, and then you use that to iterate through like a next set of experiments and ideas and this kind of this notion of like continually iterating on your identity. And I think blogging for me has kind of been that an accidental vehicle for me to like try out different identities, try out different styles of writing, try out different ideas. And when I look back at my writing and my blogging online, I can see how that like iterative experimental nature to my writing has led to connections with a very diverse set of people, you know, people who might be in the art world or people who might be in the consulting world, people who might be, you know, have their own email newsletter or people who might be like running VC firms. Like depending on what I'm writing about, there are these kind of pathways open up and, you know, obviously most of them don't go anywhere, right? Most of it is just spinning the wheels and just, you know, throwing shit at a wall. But occasionally you kind of stumble on these things that then gather traction in some form. And then there's kind of two forms of traction. Either it's like external traction, like somebody else responds to it. You know, it's kind of like, oh, this is going somewhere. People are emailing me or I'm getting introductions or I'm getting clients. Or it generates kind of internal traction. I kind of like, oh, that felt really interesting. I was really interested in that thing I wrote about. I really liked the way that I explored that topic or whatever. And so there was kind of like, it creates these threads that you can pull on to kind of like start reframing your own identity around this new industry, this new trend, or this new opportunity, or this new style of what you want to do. And so I think a lot about, it's unsurprisingly, I have a blog post that I'm writing about this book, Working Identity, because I think it was such an interesting book, and I think there's such a really clear parallel to blogging in particular about this idea that it's so cheap and easy to try on identities and experiment with identities. So like identity formation and experimental identity formation as a kind of blogging act is something that I'm really interested in. I think I've done accidentally in the past without having kind of had an explicit lens on it.
Yeah. And I think it's what is kind of like lower B blogging. I remember Howard Gray, who I learned about you and your work, was the context of just lowercase B blogging of just fully fleshed, you know, printed up blogs that are then going to be in publications, just more just expressing, you know, some things you're noticing in recent activities, things of that nature, and just kind of taking the pressure off. And it sounds like that's another way to then experiment with identities and kind of learn by thinking and learn by doing, so to speak.
Yeah, totally. Interestingly, that small B blogging post that I wrote was one of my most popular, even though it was talking about how you know, you could write for small audiences. I think what's interesting about that is that, you know, one of the central tenets in that small B blogging piece is kind of like, if you're writing on Medium, it feels kind of soulless. And I think when you process that, or when I process that idea of small B blogging now through that lens of working identity and narrative formation, I think one of the reasons that writing on Medium feels empty is because it all looks the same. And so it's really hard to generate your own identity that way. It's possible, don't get me wrong. You know, plenty of good writers on Medium, plenty of people have built their careers and audiences on Medium. But when you're like, the default out of the box kind of like experience is you write something on Medium, it looks nice, but it looks just the same as everyone else's. And so it's like, how do you generate an identity off that? I think it's much harder than getting your own domain name, building your own little blog, no matter how weird or like janky it looks on the edges, and then using that as a kind of like a mark in the sand to be like, this is me, this is what I'm going to experiment with, and this is what I'm going to do and write about, and so on. And that's a lot of what I think the thrust of that small B blogging piece was, you know, like everyone chases scale, everyone chases page views and audience with their writing. And actually writing for me in like networked writing, like writing online, is a thing for me which generates like connections. And I care much more about like the number of coffee meetings or the number of podcasts, like, you know, appearances that I can generate off a piece of writing than I do about like page views or whatever. And for me, that's been very concrete. Like, you know, I think like 2019, I think I generated like maybe 20, 30,000 views on my blog the entire year. Not every month, but like the entire year was like 20, 30,000 views, which is like basically zero in the world of blogging. And yet those 30,000 views generated, you know, consulting leads, coffee meetings, podcast appearances. Like, it was everything I needed. It was kind of I didn't need a millions of page views to do anything or do what I wanted to do. And so that's kind of what small B blogging for me is that generative idea of like small writing for small audiences, but writing things that you care about that like align with your identity is a meaningful practice and can lead interesting places for you. And so there's this like larger narrative about like blogging is dead. And I just don't buy it. Right. That's just not like, I think the characteristics of the networks online have changed. So it's like, it's harder to feel like you've got like an internet home run. You know, like I remember writing on the internet back in like 2008, 2009, you could write something and kind of like it felt like everyone on the internet read it. And now it's much, much harder to get a thing that like feels like everyone on the internet read it. But actually, like, that doesn't matter. Like, it's not important for everyone to read it. And those numbers are just, you know, artificial anyway. What matters is like the kind of generative aspect of what that writing does for you, and where it takes you. So anyway, as you can tell, I can get I can really dive into this stuff.
I love it. It's really empowering and inspiring to people to say, to not necessarily focus on a big audience, but quality over quantity, and small posts are just can really have a big impact like it has for you.
Yeah.
So on the topic of strategic independent and your work around that, maybe can you break it down in terms of what are the different kind of silos that are within strategy? Like, so maybe, you know, speaking to the freelancer that's like, I'm a marketer or I'm a designer or I'm a writer. Mm-hmm. How could they, because I know that your work is around helping people get what they deserve and paid more, and mm-hmm. by adding the strategy element to their kind of freelance work. So can you maybe break it down, maybe a couple of different silos or types of projects and that you've seen through the years to that freelancer that's kind of just getting started a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Unsurprisingly, I wrote a blog post about this. Obviously, this is what I'm writing my book around. It called The Strategic Independent. And the thesis of that post is basically that everyone chases strategic work. Everyone wants to do strategy work. It sounds interesting and sexy and exciting, and it's often well-paid work. But when you break it down, what that really means for most types of work, and certainly for kind of that like freelancer idea, is it means doing work in context. And so I give a few examples in the post, things like, you know, if you're a copywriter, for example, there's a number of different ways the clients can engage with you and you can do work, right? And the if you think about the kind of the lower end, the more like outsourced, functional, output-oriented end of that work is like a client says, I need 2 500 word posts by Friday. And you're like, okay, fine, I can write those. And you write them, you send them off to the client. And when you're operating at that layer of like freelancing, you are basically like ignorant of all of the context that your client is going through, right? So the client, on the other hand, let's say they're like the VP of marketing or director of marketing for a client, they sit within all kinds of projects around growth objectives, customer acquisition, SEO, like all of these things that boil down to, I need to find somebody to go write 500 words in a blog post for me. When you start to understand some of the context, you can start to understand why you get frustrated with the client, right? So there's a lot of frustration I find between freelancers and clients. And a lot of that frustration boils down to not understanding changing natures of context. So your client might say, oh, I commissioned those 2 pieces of writing from you, but I haven't put them on the website. And as a copywriter, you might be like, you paid for my work, I sent you the posts, and you didn't put them on the website. Like, what the hell? What gives? I don't feel valued. I don't feel meaningful. And you're probably not going to keep buying these posts from me if you're not putting them on the website. On the other hand, the director of marketing or the VP of marketing is operating in like, well, you know, maybe the entire website is getting rebuilt, or maybe they're like raising a Series B of VC money, and that's just like occupied their attention for a few months. Like, there's all kinds of other contexts that can kind of, and this is the kind of the phrase I use in the blog post, is can cause a kind of context collapse, right? And within which all of those like lower order tasks get paused or canceled or budget shifted. And if you're operating just within your own little sphere, then those context collapse feel like they come out of nowhere. They're very demoralizing. Your budget gets cut or your project gets cut. You get fired by the client or whatever. And these things can happen regularly, right? Like, everyone, I think, has kind of like felt that experience of I'm working on a project and then all of a sudden it goes to shit. And so when we think about strategic work and we think about like the career progression of a freelancer, I always push people to basically look for the adjacent contexts, right? And I think it can literally be as simple as asking your client, like, well, why am I writing these posts for you? Like, I'm going to write them, same fee, same price, like same delivery, everything, but just giving a little bit of context of like where they sit within your priorities, within your quarterly goals or yearly goals or whatever. And you'll be surprised at what you get back. You'll be surprised that the client will open up often and be like, oh yeah, well, you know, we're trying to do this SEO stuff. We're trying to rank these keywords, or we're trying to drive new leads for our project, blah, blah, blah. And through the course of opening up that context, you can find other gaps to plug. So you might be like, oh, well, you're hiring these other copywriters to write these other pieces of writing, but there's no actual style guide for all of these writers. So there's no like consistent tone of voice. Like, would you be interested if like I put together a tone of voice document that like can help, you know, us manage this process a bit better? And through this kind of like iterative, like, you know, you're asking the client for context, getting that context, and then using that to apply, like plug other gaps, there's a kind of a laddering up that can happen where it's like you can go from, this is a very, very kind of crude metric, but I think about like laddering up through context as almost like 10xing the like project scope. So you can think about like maybe you write a blog post for $500, maybe you do a style guide for $5,000, right? Maybe you would put together like a content strategy for $50,000, right? And so like these kind of like laddering up of context to ever more quote unquote strategic work is really just nothing more or less than looking at a wider and wider context for the work that you're working in. And what's nice about that is like obviously strategic work is more interesting, it gets you better paid, but it also avoids that context collapse, right? Because if you're working on a content strategy and suddenly the content strategy shifts, you're still the owner of that content strategy, even if all of the content writers within suddenly experience this kind of like canceling of budgets, restructuring of budgets, posts not going live, whatever. It's like you're suddenly kind of on the inner circle, just outside this kind of like this event horizon of the context collapse that happens inside the organization. And you know, so I give some examples in the post of like ways that you can do that, but I think a lot of times it's really about understanding that you can ask the client for more context. And that it's a kind of there is a social dynamic at play in which you can just kind of like work your way into those environments. And it's why when I do my own consulting work, even now, I'm always hungry for the adjacent context. So I might be working with the CMO or even the CEO on a specific initiative for an organization. And I'm always hungry for like the adjacent. I'm always hungry for like, well, what's happening in that part of the business? I know it's got nothing to do with this project, but like, just give me the like one line out. Give me the like heads up of like what's going on over there. And I'm always surprised at like the things that will come back to you from that. This kind of like generative insights that you can get about how this like organization as a whole functions and how much the things that are going on over there will have these kind of like shockwave impacts onto the things that you're working on. So anyway, that was a very long-winded answer to your question, but I think that was for me the very foundation of the framing that like helped me think about the framing personally and the identity piece from like freelancer to consultant. Like I use the word consultant, but I think you can obviously go in lots of different ways, use lots of different labels. But ultimately it's about shifting from like a freelancer who just does the work to a strategic independent who looks for that context, who looks for that kind of strategic layer to add to their work, which basically makes their own work better paid and more resilient.
And do you, because I've seen it a couple times where it's like, you know, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? And you're really advocating for like, even though you can, it's a quick yes and it feels good to say yes. And then it's like, hold up, pause for a second, think about the bigger picture here, additional context, and then ask some additional questions before you jump into it. Because once you say yes, you said yes to that thing and right. Not a broader piece, which has, you know, narrative and also then the business context too.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, listen, I think it's also a good reminder that this isn't necessarily a way to kind of like quote unquote worm out of the like the execution work. Like doing the work is still important. And certainly when you're like looking for clients, when you're looking for work, it isn't a, you know, client asks for X and you say, well, why is X important? And like you're trying to get the strategic work. It's more like, yes, I'll do that for you, but also tell me why it's important. So it's kind of a yes and generative mentality to be like, I'm going to do the thing you want, but I'm going to do it better because I'm going to understand why I'm doing it and why you need it. And through that process, it also allows you to kind of like I said, springboard into those other contexts over time.
Mm-hmm. And so a bunch of, you kind of started off doing a lot of SEO type of independent mm-hmm. work. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing as like emerging fields, or what would you say are some like important skills for that, you know, that copywriter, that independent kind of freelancer that's kind of getting started now? How do you think, where could they start learning more and developing more of their kind of portfolio of skills to be able to take on, you know, bigger projects? Obviously they need to ask for context too, but you got to have some skills as well.
Yeah. I can get very opinionated about SEO and I don't think this is the place for that. But I think that my default stance is that SEO is not going anywhere. It's a useful skill and it's a useful kind of acquisition channel for companies, but the practice of quote unquote being an SEO consultant or being an SEO like writer is increasingly marginalized. It's increasingly like lower down the value chain inside organizations. And the thing that is increasingly emergent as obvious and important for organizations is understanding the kind of complete customer journey and user experience. And SEO is a piece of that, right? And so the old school methodology of SEO, which is focused around like keyword research. So it's like, okay, what are the keywords, the terms that people are putting into Google that I can like rank for? That methodology, which, you know, is like 15 years old at this point, it is now much more closely aligned. And I would say the modern version of that is much more like an ethnographic and like user research project to understand not just the terms that they're typing in, and that data is like freely available, but also why they're typing in those terms and who those people are and what they're looking for. You know, I think Google is getting much, much better at understanding why people search for the terms they do and which results cater to that intent, not to just the words that they typed in, right? And so you can see this in all kinds of ways. But you know, if somebody is searching for, let's say, like a housing plan, they have lots of different potential intents, some of which could be they want to build a house, some of it could they want to hire a contractor, some of it they could be just like doing research for some other project. And you know, disambiguating those and creating a better understanding for your client of the actual kind of user intent and the user journey through those pathways, through those tasks, is a thing which I think is useful not just for SEO, but for all kinds of other things, right? It can be useful for like how you lay out the page, how you build calls to action, how you build like email newsletters that can like drag them in and you know, engage them on site. You know, I've done a lot of work with media organizations, and I think media organizations have had this light bulb moment a little bit as they shift from ad generated, like ad revenue to like subscriber generated revenue, they've had these kind of aha moments of like, oh, it isn't just capturing an email address. It's capturing an email address with a specific intent to subscribe to a series of emails that is like directly relevant to them. And like you see this in local journalism as well, for example, where there's been some really interesting work done around like looking at the actual pieces of journalism that drive subscribers, not just page views. And almost always the results, like they don't surprise you, but it is still kind of counterintuitive in a certain sense, which is like fewer articles of higher quality that are more meaningful to the audience are the ones that drive subscribers. And you're like, well, like obviously in a sense, and yet that is not what the data will tell you if you just look at page views and traffic and SEO. And so I think this is, again, this is a long-winded way of saying, if you're a copywriter and you're in the SEO world and you're thinking about content, you're thinking about generating content for clients, look for ways to deepen your understanding of the customer journey that this fits into, right? So like everything from like before they do the Google search, the keyword they search for, what is like their mindset and intent, and what is their like perspective and so on. And then once they land on the page, what do they want to engage with, and how should the content be structured to give them what they want in that moment? And then what are the like jumping off points? So like what should they read next, or what should they do next off that content? And so again, it's widening that context field of view from just writing the words to where do these words sit both in the client's context but also in the user's context, to understand like where people want to go, what they want to do, and how they want to do it.
So maybe a little bit more context to this conversation is that I'm here in New York. Mm-hmm. You're previously based in New York, and you're now in South Carolina. Obviously, the world has changed a bunch, and you recently had another blog post called the Quarantined Independent. Mm-hmm. I guess would love to just dive into some of those ideas there about, you know, this environment and how, you know, we can still operate from that perspective of ideally getting paid more than the freelancer, mm-hmm. But also knowing that the economic environment has changed.
Yeah, sure. And I would love to be able to have like answers to those things. The Quarantine Independent is kind of my latest writing, which is very much me like thinking in public and trying to figure out the answers to some of those questions, which I don't have good answers for. You know, I think just reflecting on my own work in these times, I've been very grateful and thankful to have, you know, some clients continue paying me through these times. But the work itself has been harder. Working remotely versus working in the office. My default mode of operating previously has been like, I'm in your office 2 or 3 days a week. I'm embedded in your organization. I have an email address at your organization. I'm gathering tons of context about what's going on, and shifting suddenly to a remote context where my view of the organization is much more narrow, where I'm not getting the adjacent context, and where budgets are tighter and timelines are faster has been tough, like a hard operating environment for me personally. And so reflecting on what that means and how to move forward has kind of been the focus of that writing. I think I don't have good answers except to say that some of my previous practice, it shines a light on some of the like breaking points or weak points, I think, around consulting. And so one of the things that I've kind of prided myself on, or I think maybe gotten away with in previous times, is like I usually operate with clients with a pretty loose scope. Intentionally, right? Like I intentionally want a loose scope, which gives me room to do things that are useful. The flip side of that and the fragility of that operating mode that I'm discovering now is that when everything shifts to remote and I'm no longer in the context, it's harder to know what's useful in that moment, right? Mm-hmm. And so operating on projects that are less well-defined suddenly brings with it a bunch of ambiguity and kind of like unknowns, right? And so I'm forcing myself to be proactive with client communication to make sure that I'm like trying to get as much context as I can, trying to get into the other work streams and workflows to like, you know, find out like where is the work, so we're situating the work that I'm doing right now inside other contexts. But those other contexts are also shifting faster than they ever have, right? Like the operating window for organizations went from, you know, quarters and years to weeks and months, and days even sometimes. And so operating as an independent, as a consultant in those times has been challenging, and I'm trying to figure out like ways through. You know, one of the ways through that I've been interested in writing about and exploring is this idea of kind of executive sparring, There's another blogger, Venkatesh Rao, who I'm a big fan of. He writes a blog called Ribbon Farm, but he also has a newsletter specifically for independent consultants called Art of Gig. And his kind of default mode of consulting is executive sparring, basically one-on-one, like a mixture of kind of coaching and problem solving one-on-one with executives. And one of the interesting things is that that mode of work is very resilient. In these times where everything's remote and everything is changing, that kind of way of working has stayed very consistent, very stable for him at least. And I've done pieces of that work myself in the past. I've done some executive sparring, and it kind of blends this idea of coaching, sparring, problem solving, being a thought partner in various projects. And I've done some of that, but I haven't necessarily got a ton of client work specifically around that discipline. And so that's something that I'm interested in exploring next is like, how do I, is this quarantine and this work from home thing is going to continue for the next year, let's say, or even longer? How do I navigate consulting and how do I operate a consulting practice in that environment? Some of the way, like I said, some of it may be like tighter scopes and more defined projects, potentially with shorter timeframes. And some of it may be like shifting into more of that executive sparring, which I think in some senses is more relevant than it has ever been, right? Like I think executives are more lost than they have ever been in this environment, right? You're operating in a massive mode of uncertainty across all kinds of different trajectories and vectors, both operationally and kind of like positionally out in the world. And so, being an executive, a sparring partner to be able to think through those things and kind of like, do some real-time processing around what needs to get done and how do we do it, I think is a thing that is going to like underpin some of the future consulting work for me.
And is that obviously it's context specific and case by case, but would you imagine that that's like, and you mentioned you've done a lot of work in the media with media companies. Is that kind of approaching executives in the industry and saying, here's kind of what I think some of the challenges that you're thinking through. Here's how I'd like to potentially work with you. Here's some solutions. Is that kind of what the sparring roadmap looks like? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think, one of the things that I found true in my consulting work is that a lot of executives in organizations are just very, very hungry for somebody that thinks like them. They're basically like they whether rightly or wrongly, their default stance is like, I'm surrounded by idiots. No one thinks like I do, and no one can like see the horizon like I can. Now, oftentimes, one of the things I work with executives on is often a lot of times that is a direct consequence of your actions, right? It's like you have kept your team focused on the task, looking down in the trenches, focused on the weeds, and that like you have trained your team not to be sparring partners with you, right? Not to do the like horizon term look like viewport. And so when I come in and do some consulting work, one of the first things that happens is usually an executive like is great. Now I have like a sparring partner. Now I have somebody to think like me who can like look at the horizon, look at the whole map, figure out what we're doing now, figure out what we're doing in quarters, figure out what we're doing in years. And, we can like create a strategy and a roadmap together. And so I think that's kind of the lived experience of what sparring looks and feels like a little bit in terms of generating sparring clients. I think a lot of it is about exposing your thinking in public. And this is a distinction that I think a lot of freelancers and consultants and all kinds of independents misunderstand is everyone aims to publish case studies. Everyone wants like to be able to point to successful projects that they have done and brands they've worked with. And while case studies have a place, they're fine. They serve a specific need about kind of trust. They're not very good at generating like high value senior executive work because they're empty and devoid of the actual thinking that went on. And the reason that you get hired as a consultant, as an independent, is usually because of your thinking. It's usually because of your mental model of the world. And so the way to get executive sparring clients and the way to get any kind of client as an independent with good strategic work is to expose your thinking, right? Which is much less about solutions and much more about problems. So some of the posts that I've written that have generated the most kind of inbound consulting work for me have not been solution posts. They haven't been, here's how to do X. They've more been like, here are five questions that I'm struggling with about media right now. And people, someone will read that and be like, holy shit, I have the same five questions. I should hire this guy because he thinks like me. That's the kind of mindset that I've kind of seen clients go through. It's much less about like, oh great, he has the answers. And it's much more like, oh great, we can think, we're on the same page. We have the same starting set of assumptions and the same worldview that lets us, create, tackle problems together, basically. So anyway, so that was kind of wrapped up in there, I think, is a very kind of concrete idea, which is if you're looking to generate more strategic work and more like work in context, then look to expose the way that you think about the world, not just the like solution posts and not just case studies. Because I think those are often devoid of the necessary like exposing the guts that is required for the more senior executives and the more senior work to find you.
Amazing. Okay. It's a great way to develop the relationships, right? It's like they know how you think, so to speak, as opposed to, you know, compared to people that you do know, they do know how you think because you know them. But right. To get new leads, new opportunities, you need to branch out the thinking so that then somebody knows, okay, I understand how Tom works. I know how he thinks.
Right.
I've got a problem. Let's go.
Right. Yeah. And I think, again, my book writing project, you know, Strategic Independent, this project, which is writing about independent consulting, and I'm writing for independent consultants, has a really like great accidental byproduct, which is I talk about my own consulting work a lot in the context of that book and in the context of that work. And one of the things that does for me is it gives everyone who reads it, they get a really good mental model of the kind of work that I do and the way that I think about problems. And what that does is it means that there's a lot of people out there who read my work, not a lot, but like the people that read my work, they're able to make strong intros for me. Right. So like, and I think about this a lot of like the way that referrals happen in the kind of independent world is we've all been there where it's like you're in a Slack group or you're on a forum or you're on like an email chain and someone says, hey, does anyone know anyone that does X? And that request goes out into that little closed community, whether it's an email group or a Slack group, and you know, whatever, like 10 people see it. Right. And what you need as independent is you need one of those 10 people to have a good enough mental model of your own work to be able to say, oh, I know someone. There's a person that I know that I can make an intro to that might be a good fit for your project. And the way that you do that and not get bombarded with like crappy work is not to be like somebody who does quote unquote SEO, right? That was kind of like a label that I used to have back in the day of like an SEO guy. That's not the label that I want for the work that I do now. And so instead, like through my writing, I've generated people who have a good mental model of the kind of stuff that I do, right? And so that has led to much better introductions and much better warm leads for these consulting projects through this process of somebody being able to stick their hand up and say like, oh, I read this piece that I think might connect the dots between what you're struggling with or what you need. And so, you know, I think about that idea of, you know, we think about writing often as being a like first order, like client generation activity. It's like, I need clients to read this, I need clients to hire me. And instead, I think a lot of it as like a second order thing. I think of it as like the people that read this writing need to be able to make a warm intro for me to whatever lead that they're exposed to and whatever work they're doing. And so I think about writing a lot as a way of just, again, exposing my thinking and being a vehicle through which people can create a kind of strong mental model of who I am and what I do. Which again falls back right to the beginning of this conversation all about identity and all of that stuff. Now, I want to reiterate that this all happened somewhat accidentally for me, right? Like I've been out on my own for about 6 years, and the first few years were definitely not spent with like a kind of clear-eyed view of how this works and who I am. It was spent in a like, oh shit, am I going to do SEO work forever? Like, who am I? What am I doing? How do I get clients? I don't understand how this works. And it emerged from this deliberate writing practice that I have that at the time I think was just me enjoying blogging, but as now I realize in hindsight was like a more foundational important piece of like what it is that I'm doing. And this kind of like notion of identity formation and so on has emerged from that. So like I don't want to give the impression that I have like all the answers like figured out and it's always been this way. This is a thing that both you know has been generative and has emerged and is still forming and still emerging, right? Like this is an ongoing, never-ending project. And at some stage I'm sure that I'm going to be like, well, I don't really want to do executive sparring anymore. I want to do some other kind of consulting work. And that's going to be a transformation and a process of like updating my thinking, updating my mental models, updating my writing, updating my identity. And you know, changing your identity is a thing which is really hard. Like, it's really hard to like kind of update your notions of like who you are and what you do. But I think it is a foundational piece of, it's a piece of work that you take on when you step out on your own, is you are now in control of your own narrative. And that is work that you need to actively kind of like tend to and work on.
Amazing. Okay. I think, Tom, this is a perfect way to stop. I really enjoy this conversation. And please let listeners know where they can follow up and read more of your thinking.
I mean, everything's on tomcritchlow.com. That's my website. I'm also pretty active on Twitter at tomcritchlow. My email address is on there, so reach out. My DMs are open. I'm always pretty available. But yeah, sorry for going on some long rants. As you can see, I get pretty passionate about this stuff. But thanks for having me on the podcast.
I loved it. Thanks so much, Tom.
All right, take care.
Hey, friend. Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. Wanted to also let you know about my monthly newsletter called One Email Away, where I fundamentally believe that we are all one email away from new opportunities. And if there's a way that I could potentially help you to connect with other people, I would love to do that. So One Email Away, you can sign up for my newsletter on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. You can also see the One Email Away section, but just want to take this moment to say thank you for listening to this episode. Really excited for us to build and grow our portfolio careers together.